I'd like to call the meeting to order, whatever the order might be, to members of the committee. We're starting a little bit late by my normal standard, but I will tell committee members, those who have been around, that it's always my intention to start on time. We've always got plenty of business, so let's all try to be just as you've done today to be here on time. Our agenda for this week is largely sort of getting acquainted with departments, with their organizations. We're not going to get into any kind of policy debates or anything like that in these next days. But it is a kind of an important, I think, level setting to understand. We have, for those that are new, we have one of the more complicated committees with all the subject matters, and I think it's very important to kind of get a handle of who the players are. So this is kind of a good acquainting with the players, including introduction of the committee. Let me put in front of you just a couple of matters, however, that are kind of on fast track so that you're aware of it. There will be a hearing on what's called the deficiency bill. The deficiency bill is about expenditures that we had in this biennium for which we have not got coverage for the expense. And for our committee, there's a couple of items that are on that agenda. I'm not choosing to bring them to the committee. I mean, deficiency typically are bills you sort of got to pay them. But I mentioned them just to make sure that Representative Huntley, from your side and from our side, that people are at least aware and comfortable. And if anybody has any issues with things, please let me know. But the two items, and I'll just sort of give you rough numbers, one of them is about a $15 million or so deficiency in the state-operated services for what's called a forensic program. And these are typically either sex offenders or dangerous mental illness situations. And this is just an increase above expectations for the number of people they have to deal with, and they're a very expensive program. So that's one of them. The other is, if I remember right, about a $4 million from the Department of Health. And this is for the move for the Department of Health and Ed that's being planned. And the issue is that in order to make that move, they have to close on the contracts. The money sort of got to be there to commit to the contracts. And I think that's what makes it legitimate and required within this biennium. So those are the two. There's other items on the deficiency bill. I think the intention on the deficiency bill is to actually bring it to the floor for a vote, I believe, on Thursday afternoon. And it's being heard in Ways and Means. So I give you that just sort of as a piece of information for the ones that might affect our committee. If anybody has some questions, please talk to me afterwards, and we'll try to answer any of those. Another item that's on a relatively fast track, not quite as fast, but on February 4th, we're being asked to produce a kind of a committee view of priorities on bonding proposals that are related to the Health Committee. My suggestion is to try to expedite that and not necessarily go back through all of the presentations. Most of it is going to be just sort of take what was passed last year, and I realize with respect to people that are new that that's you know, some of us know about that and some of us don't. I respect that, and I'll try to do what we can. But my hope is that maybe we sort of take that, but the veterans groups, those kinds of things that we already did go through and already passed, that we put those in front of us fairly quickly without having to go through exhaustive presentations. I think one of them that we are going to probably need a complete presentation is the forensic and state operated services proposals out of St. Peter, because that's changed fairly dramatically from last year. So it would be my intention to try to get these organized, get you an inventory, let you know what I believe is in front of us. Now, the other thing that's incumbent, if there are any new proposals, bonding proposals, that should come to this committee for prioritization, then please be aware of that timeline, because that means that they should get to us fairly quickly so this committee has an opportunity to review those. So that's the bonding one. And the others are just sort of two other things in terms of announcement. One, I believe everybody's aware, but just to announce and acknowledge the formation of a healthcare cost containment division that Jim Abler will be chair of, and I believe all the committee members for that have been assigned, and our people are aware. Representative Abler, is that correct?
Well, thank you. Maybe I can comment on the division in a second. I don't know if they've been formally appointed. Did they get appointed on the floor yesterday? Anybody pay attention to the announcement of the speaker?
I did not notice it, Representative Abler, so maybe in process yet.
Yeah, I think so. Giving this comment on the division, there are 11 members, six Republicans, five Democrats. The point of it is to create a product. And my earlier work in this is going to be a call for ideas. And if you can pass the word on to those who are on here today, and we'll mention it a few more times, and maybe even have a press conference calling for ideas. It's a very great problem, the whole cost issues, especially in the private market. The public market, the MA and GAMC, et cetera, will be handled more in this committee as part of the full committee process. But we need to find ways, as you all know, to kind of restrain the growth and the cost while retaining access and quality, which is a really tall task. However, I think there's enough great minds in this state and in this room and on the committee to ferret out some areas of common ground and get some consensus work. And it's really important that all the players, and that would be the chamber and the labor and the providers and the plans and actually the users and everybody who has a stake in here, gets to weigh in with their ideas and not feel like they've left too much at the table. And so there's an area of consensus we can find if we all work at that, and that's my intention. And that's it's going to be extremely bipartisan, bicameral, for all kinds of reasons, chief amongst which I want to get something passed at the end of the day that the governor can sign that will provide some relief while keeping Minnesota a leader in the health care. I expect in the interim, after session is over, there'll be some more work ongoing for another product, even next session. So but that's my vision for it. And if you have ideas of any kind, no idea is too off the page to talk to me about it. We may not do it, but at least we'll have enough ideas in the pot to choose some good ideas out of. So thank you.
And let me add sort of my emphasis as well. The empowerment that I see this committee having is something that we don't do very much of. And that is the license, in a sense, to pull together a committee bill, a comprehensive healthcare cost containment bill that would be a reflection of consensus. Now, the timetable's kind of tight, so you're going to have a real challenge there. But I really see that, and maybe we'll engage. The Senate hasn't, I don't think, closed off the door forever. And one way or another, I think it's Representative Abreu's intention that not only will we have a bipartisan consensus effort here, as an extension of this committee that will come back to us, but also that we will reach out to the Senate as well and try to build some consensus there as well on a topic that, I think anybody knocking on doors knows that healthcare cost containment is a number one and number two issues amongst all of our constituents. So, important effort. I think to those that are in the audience, I would just sort of notice that take this effort very seriously. Here's a great opportunity to come to that committee, to the chair of the committee, with your thoughts and your ideas. And there's no other place, at least at this point, that I see in the legislature that has such an opportunity to create a consensus committee bill. So use the opportunity. Fair enough?
Thank you.
Okay. And then Representative Huntley came knocking on my door just asking for work. it's more than that, because I have a great respect for Representative Huntley. We don't necessarily always agree on every issue, but I know that he is a person who does his homework, and we can depend on thoughtful discussions and thoughtful analysis. We always in this committee get a number of issues around licensing, registration, and all kinds of forms in between. And I think it's worked well for us to have sort of a separate subcommittee that we send those to, and that committee then does sort of the preliminary analysis and recommendations for the full committee. So Representative Huntley has accepted the responsibility to be chair of that subcommittee. I know that people will be pounding IOR and my door to get on that subcommittee, so we'll just try to limit the numbers. So if you're interested, the time is limited, so let us know. Any comments you may have, Representative Huntley, Doug?
All I can give people is, Mr. Chair, is reasons why they don't want to be on that committee. it usually involves discussion of scope of practice in various professions and who gets to do what. And it often involves turf battles between two groups of professionals, and it's always interesting.
That's a good Minnesota word for it, interesting. But I will say this, I mean, as difficult as it might be, it is an important part of the responsibilities of this committee to do that thoughtfully. And so I look forward to working with them. Okay, that's sort of the preliminaries. Today we are going to be hearing from the Department of Health, but before we do that, as a part of us sort of getting acquainted with the players, I'd like to start with the most important people as far as this committee working, right, and that's our staff. So if we can start, let's start over here any time and just go around and have the staff, and if there's some other staff around, make sure you raise your hand if it's, whether it's a partisan, whatever it may be. I want to make sure we get a chance to meet everybody. So if you could introduce yourself and tell us what your role is.
Mr. Chair, I'm Tom Pender from the Health Research Department, and I deal with health insurance issues.
Mr. Chair, I'm Michael Meilenberg, and I do research for GOP caucus.
I'm Randy Chun with House Research, deal with issues related to state health care programs and nursing homes and health care cost containment.
Mr. Chair, I'm Danielle Pinelli-Lemire, also with House Research, and I work on the occupational licensing and also the MA long-term care waiver services.
I'm going to pop over here and then we'll come back here.
Mr. Chair, I'm Lynn Ace. I work with House Research Department, and I'll be handling chemical dependency and mental health issues, DHS licensing issues, professional licensing issues, and the regional treatment
plan. Mr. Chair, I'm Janelle Taylor. I'm also with Health Research, dealing with general health and health department.
And I'm Dave Freeman. I do research for the DFL.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Schill, and I work with House Fiscal. So anything money or numbers related, that's me.
Cheryl Burke, I'm the committee legislative assistant.
Last but not least, I am Susie Giroux, the committee administrator for the Health Policy Finance Committee.
Well, except I think we did skip our important page here. I'm going to introduce yourself.
I'm Mike Andrews. I'm Paige. I take care of you guys.
Amen. Is there anybody else that staff or anything that supports the committee that I may have missed that's in the audience yet? If not, let me turn back. I believe the next item is about the overview of health policy. No, I'm sorry. We haven't done members. It said the staff's important, but we still need to meet members as well. So why don't we begin over here, and if members and introducing yourselves, tell us sort of where you're from, your district, but also a little bit about how you came to be part of health and the health committee. Eva?
I'm actually Neva Walker from South Central Minneapolis at 35W on Lake Street, to give you an idea of where my district is. When I got elected 3 terms ago now, I was lobbied by former reps, current reps, county staff, city staff, DFL members, and so I kind of knew I was going to be on Health and Human Service.
I'm Barb Goodwin. I represent Columbia Heights, Ridley, Hilltop, and St. Anthony, and I've been trying to get on this committee for it's my 3rd term now, so I'm happy to be here. I have a large number of older people, population in my district, and health care access and affordability are big issues.
I'm Tom Huntley, District 7A, which is East Duluth, and this is my 13th year on this committee.
Paul Thiessen, from Minneapolis and Richfield, and I'm starting my 2nd term, and I asked to be on the committee. It's because it's so complicated, I think if you're not here, you don't know what's going on, so that's kind of primarily my interest.
Kim Deacon from Twin Valley. I represent up in northwest Minnesota, counties of Norman, Menominee, most of Becker County, southern parts of Polk and Clearwater counties, and it's an area with a high percentage of senior citizens, and health care is a big issue up there, so wanted to be on this committee. Just found out I was on it yesterday. So.
Sai Tao, I represent part of St. Paul here. This is my 2nd session, and this is my I look forward to have a spirited debate in here.
I'm Representative Mary Ellen Otremba, and I represent a part of the middle of Minnesota, Todd County, Douglas County. I've been on this committee since I was elected in 1997.
Jim Abler from Anoka in the city of Ramsey. This is my 4th term and the same amount of time on this committee, and I think it's fascinating, and I think that there's so many good things we can do, and above all, we should do no harm.
And I'm Fran Bradley from Rochester, with just a little bitty healthcare effort in Rochester that has about 30,000 people a day coming into our community. So that's certainly one of the reasons for the connections. Plus, I think, as every one of us know, I came here too because I do view that we have the topic. I mean, some people are fearful of it, but we have the topics that are really critical, important topics.
I'm Representative Brad Finstead from, I represent Brown County. I'm from New Ulm, all of Brown County, part of Redwood, and part of Watonwan County. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't ask to be on this committee my first term 2 years ago, but soon learned that the complexities and the interests are great, and it's just a great committee to be involved in, so I did ask to be on it this term. So I'm happy to be here.
I'm Tom Emmer. I represent the southeastern corner of Wright County. I think this is probably, as a first-time legislator, one of the best committees you can be on in terms of making a difference for the people in your district and for the people of the state of Minnesota. I'm happy to be here.
Sheriff Sanderson, I represent District 50B, which is basically the other half of Barb's district, and it includes New Brighton and Ivy Hills. My background is nursing and nursing home administration. Therefore, I asked a couple years ago to be on this committee and starting my second term, and definitely wanted to be here so I can serve the continuing care needs of the people in Minnesota.
I'm Representative Duke Powell in my second term from representing Burnsville and Savage in District 40A. I've been a practitioner of healthcare and emergency medical services specifically for 33 years, and I came onto this committee by request my first term, and well, not this committee, but the policy committee, and was rather astonished about how much I didn't know about these types of policies, and I found it fascinating, and I've been here to learn more about it, and I'm very, very pleased to be a member of this committee.
My name is Matt Dean, and I'm from Northern Washington County, and I look forward to the work of this committee. Reform in this area is the number one area of work that we have to do as a legislature, in my opinion, and we do that reform in a context of reform, but also of trying to maintain quality. I think we have the best quality health care in the world, and maintaining that quality within the context of change and reform is a fascinating one, and I think it's going to require a lot of diligent work, and I look forward to it and look forward to working with you all.
Hi, I'm Joyce Pepin. I'm a freshman legislator from Rogers, also represent part of Maple Grove, Hassan, Dayton, Corcoran, Hanover, Greenfield, a lot of communities. I don't have a background in healthcare, but there is a growing need for a hospital in my community, particularly Maple Grove, and that is will be a big issue this year, and look forward to a very spirited debate.
We all want to thank you for that issue.
I'm Tim Wilkin. I represent Egan and Burnsville. I was first put on this committee by some other guy named Tim from Egan, and have never left. And great committee to be on, a lot to learn. Representative Thiessen, being on the committee doesn't mean you know everything. It's seventh year and still learning. So settle in and enjoy.
Well, I've been being asked by various people what I think about the committee, and I'm excited about the makeup of our committee. I think we represent a really great cross-section of folks, and that's the way good policy is made. So far, we are able to kumbaya, and we're all in agreement. Everything's wonderful. We will probably debate things. That's okay. But I hope that as we do that, we'll do like we've always done, and that's we'll debate respectfully. We'll debate with good information, and we'll come to votes and we'll come to decisions. But I hope that we'll be a group that, I mean, I sense it from the comments already. People recognize how complicated our issues are. And I will also admit to you that we've got both policy and finance now, and I think that's a great way to organize, and that'll give us some efficiencies. But on the finance side, there's no question we have some extraordinary challenges ahead of us. So we'll be hunkering down and spend some time together, lots of time together. We're going to talk maybe just a little bit of an introduction about the policy and finance. So maybe just a little bit of background. I think I shared this with the caucuses when I met with you individually, but for the audience as well, when you look at the papers that show the organization of committees these days, you see something that's quite different in the health and human services arena. Because I think for a long time the tradition has been that we've had a health and human services policy committee and a health and human services finance committee, and that's sort of the way we've run the business. I've been advocating for some time that we ought to combine the policy and finance because it's clumsy at times when we have bills that have some money in them, so we deal with them in the policy committee to deal with the policy items, and then we send it to the finance committee, and then we discover something policy-wise that we should change, and then we ask ourselves, should it or should it not bounce back to the policy committee, and it could turn into a turf war. I think we've had the good fortune of having chairs that have been able to kind of work together, so we've managed to work our way beyond it. But I think by organizing, bringing those together, it means that we can do what makes good sense in combining those subjects. Then the other part of it is sort of a kind of a strategic alignment, because as we've all sort of said, health as an issue is a number one, number two issue amongst our constituents, and to have a committee whose entire focus is on health issues, I think, really lets us have a strategic focus. And then on the other side, just a kind of a little bit of editorial comment about Representative Gunther's committee, which I happen to serve on, but I think it's pretty exciting to sort of combine the best welfare program in the world, which are good jobs, with the welfare programs. And that's kind of the essence of Gunther's committee, which is the Jobs and Economic Opportunity Committee. It likewise is a policy finance committee, but it has focused all the way from some of the things that we do to stimulate the jobs environment, to job training programs, to workforce centers, to assistance for the blind. I mean, there's a whole combination of things that were part of the previous Jobs and Economic Development Committee, and then it joins that with the programs that help people, especially as they enter the workforce and maybe need a little help in their child care, in food assistance, in a lot of other assistance programs, including the Minnesota Family Investment Program. So I think it's kind of a really great combination that works sort of both ways. So his group is just beginning to get into it, but I think they've also got it exciting as we sort of reorganize. That sort of quick backdrop, I think we'll ask Mr. Yu to sort of acquaint you. Those who've been around for a long time know that I'm not given to a lot of school time. I'm given to homework to some extent. And our staff has put together for your assistance a briefing book, which we're not going to go through in its entirety today, but I've asked Mr. Reed maybe just to acquaint us with some of the organizational things of the committee, what's in front of you, what's available, and we'll sort of take it from there briefly and then get into the health department.
Good morning. Briefly, the binders are here to help educate you and assist you throughout the session. General information on our major programs as well as definitions of acronyms. It's a different language here in the healthcare world, and a lot of information on just basic definitions and acronyms. The member and staff list, the book is fairly self-explanatory. The one helpful thing is the House research list of all of the, we have four different House research staff, which is unique. Most areas have one or two researchers. We have four. Gives you an idea of how vast our area is and what responsibilities they have. Then you move into the department contacts, and there's lots of different folks that will help you out with questions at the department and their contact information. The information brief and program summary area is briefs that the House Research has done on our major programs, and that information is their up-to-date briefs and very helpful. The Department of Health and Human Services at a glance is a very, very small snapshot, and the departments will be providing us with additional information with their presentations in the next couple of days. The next tab is the, as I had mentioned, sort of the glossary of acronyms and definitions. And then the only sort of fiscal part that we included is general information on our sort of income and asset levels, which is very helpful. To turn back to the first tab, which is the committee information, I thought this would be helpful to both committee members and the public, as Everyone is wondering what exactly are the new committee jurisdictions between the health committee as well as jobs. The first sheet is within the Department of Human Services, the major accounts, and then sort of one subsection down. It is certainly not a comprehensive list. Our fiscal staff had told me she could do a comprehensive list would take 42 pages, roughly, of all of our sub-accounts. So this is to give you a flavor of that we do retain jurisdiction over all of the Minnesota public health programs, including Minnesota Care, GMC, medical assistance, our prescription drug programs. We also have state-operated services and the regional treatment centers, as well as forensic services, the continuing care division under DHS, and lots of different programs under there. Our alternative care programs and our developmentally disabled within the medical assistance programs and our waivers, mental health and chemical dependency are sort of the major areas that the Health Policy Finance Committee will remain jurisdiction over. We will keep the entire Department of Health as well as all of our health-related boards and organizations. I also prepared a sheet that gives you an example of what will be moving over to the Jobs Committee. In general, that will be all of our welfare programs, the MFIP and DWP, as well as general assistance, child care, housing, child support, and other children's services. I am happy to, and on the backside, Children's Mental Health, Refugee Services, and other Children Economic Assistance Grants programs. I am happy to answer any questions if folks have them with more detail on small little programs that you didn't think, you're not quite sure where they fit. So feel free to contact me at any point with further questions.
And I think the committee members in general are aware, but I just want you to be sure that Ms. Giroux is an extremely capable, wonderful committee administrator, and she serves all of us, regardless of party designation. So if you need something, please do don't hesitate stopping by. Okay? Well, then let's proceed. I think our first area, I'd like to welcome to the testimony table the Department of Health and take us through a certain overview. As I said, it's our intention today to sort of get acquainted with the organization players and not to get ourselves into any kind of policy issues or those kinds of things. So, and I'm assuming that, Commissioner, if there are clarification questions as we go, people can certainly ask. So, otherwise, I'd ask you to sort of hold a question, but just for clarification on point, please proceed, and if you could introduce yourselves for the tape, please.
Good morning. I am Diane Vandernack. I'm Commissioner of Health. I have with me this morning the Assistant Commissioners, Doug Spang, Aggie Lighthizer, Carol Wolverton, and also Dave Holvit and Margaret Kelly from our finance area. I certainly want to thank members of the committee, chairman and members, for inviting us to present an overview of the Health Department. There are a few other materials that are available for you this morning, the agency profile that we prepared for the Department of Finance, as well as the Minnesota Department of Health organizational chart. I'd like to start by basically providing a very brief description of public health. Then I'll move into some of the important areas of work at the Minnesota Department of Health, and I'll conclude with a brief summary of our funding, where it comes from and where it goes. Both the state and federal constitution include references to government's role in protecting the public's health. Minnesota law authorizes a shared role with local government in public health. And we're going to talk a bit more about that later. At MDH, we are responsible for considering all Minnesotans, and we approach our responsibilities really in two ways. One is by encouraging people to do things that benefit their health, things like exercise, the use of seat belts, proper nutrition. We also have another aspect, and that's requiring certain entities that play a role in determining people's health and making sure that they comply. For example, how restaurants manage food so that it's safe, how nursing homes perform and assure quality for our residents. We want to make a distinction between health care and public health. Individual health is about that person's health issue, your diagnosis, your treatment, your recovery. And the medical system, especially here in Minnesota, does an excellent job. Public health applies to communities or groups. It's population health. It is based on shared characteristics. It focuses on preventing problems before they become more serious. At the Minnesota Department of Health and at local public health agencies across the state, we're committed to ensuring the conditions in which all Minnesotans can be healthy. The National Institutes of Health, which is part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, has identified three core functions of public health. And you will see examples of that as we talk this morning. First is assessing health. What are the health trends and changes over time? Who's affected? For example, last year the legislature approved legislation to provide for a better assessment of birth defects. In this area, we look at our data, we look at birth records, we look at death records, disease reports, we attempt to determine trends. The second area is promote policy. These may be laws or things like education or guidelines. An example of this is which vaccination should children receive and at what age. And the third component is to assure effectiveness. We look at whether identified problems are being addressed, as well as whether the programs that are in place are really effective. For example, our Eliminate Health Disparities Initiative, we have been looking very closely at the data to see whether we're making progress in this particular area. This particular slide, I think, is of interest because it highlights the huge changes in average life expectancy. There's an increase of 30 years that occurred in the 20th century. The Centers for Disease Control, which is one of our key national partners, has estimated that 25 of the 30 years of life gained in the 20th century is actually the result of public health accomplishments. One of the things as you look at the graph, you notice that there's a big dip in 1918. And that's because of the 1918 influenza epidemic. More than 10,000 Minnesotans died at that point in time. And if we had today's population at the same rate, with the same kind of an outbreak, we would see over 28,000 Minnesotans die, and we would have almost 200,000 be very, very sick. That is the issue that we really need to be concerned about. I mentioned earlier our link with local government and public health. The 1976 Community Health Services Act established a framework and recognized several hundred local public health agencies and reorganized them into now 51 county city health departments that cover the entire state. We share responsibility for public health, and we act together to identify and address public health issues. About $33 million in state and federal funds is distributed each year by MDH to these local public health agencies. These funds then, in turn, leverage additional local dollars. There are three task groups that I really want to highlight because these are three that are set in statute. These are advisory to the commissioner. We have the State Community Health Services Advisory Committee, and that is a committee that is set up of a combination of local public health directors as well as county commissioners. They meet quarterly to talk about issues that are germane to public health, and they serve in an advisory role to the commissioner. We also have the Rural Health Advisory Committee and the Maternal and Child Health Advisory Committee. Certainly, we have many more task forces and committees, but those are three that are set in statute. Now we'd like to switch gears a bit and give you a glimpse into some of our work by showing you some of the things that you and the taxpayers of Minnesota get from the Minnesota Department of Health. Minnesota has ranked first in health 9 times since national rankings, which are compiled by the United Health Foundation, began in 1990. We know we still have a lot of work to do, particularly in certain areas. And one of them is especially with regard to race and ethnic health disparities. This map shows where the 52 Eliminating Health Disparities Initiative grants are currently in place. And I'm pleased to report we're making some progress. And I want to give you a few examples. Central Campesino is a migrant farm worker organization. It held 8 immunization clinics in 3 southern counties. 464 adults were immunized for hepatitis C and tetanus. As a result of the storefront group, which is working with Somali families, 95% of Somali students in the 3 schools in which the storefront works have up-to-date immunizations. The Boise Fort Band of Chippewas developed a 6-week summer youth work program to improve physical fitness. Youth that participated in this program lost an average of 3.4 pounds. The Carondelet Life Care Ministries collaborates with the Latino parishes in the St. Paul area to provide culturally appropriate diabetes education classes and health screenings. The program screened 846 people for diabetes over a 27-month period. And through the Indian Health Board, Nurturing Families, Native Ways Project, families participating in the program received educational home visits, after which 90% were aware of the risk factors for breast and cervical cancer. We are making a difference. MDH is also where you get birth and death records. We have over 9 million birth and death records. Several years ago, the legislature funded moving from a paper-based system to an electronic system that links counties throughout the state. There were 2 big benefits from this. You used to need to go to either where the birth or the death occurred to get a copy, or you could come to the health department. Now you can go to any county to get a record from anywhere in the state. You can also get the forms on our website for requesting a birth or death certificate. And I would suggest that this is an example how MDH can better serve the people of Minnesota more efficiently through innovations in information technology. Epidemiologists and laboratory workers work together to monitor disease reports and laboratory specimens to quickly identify disease outbreaks. For example, now that the West Nile virus is in our state, we have a comprehensive system in place for tracking where animal and human cases of the virus occur. As a result of this kind of monitoring, we've been able to determine that more cases have occurred in southwestern and north-central parts of the state. With this information, then, we can target our prevention efforts where it can make the most difference. The Public Health Lab and the infectious disease epidemiologists have developed a working relationship that I would suggest is the envy of many other states. And I want to give you an example. Because of our pioneering work in developing what's called the DNA fingerprinting process to compare cases of infectious disease, we were able to quickly identify a disease outbreak in the early stages. I'm sure you remember June of 2003. Minnesota had 2 confirmed cases of E. coli 0157, a foodborne illness. One of the cases was hospitalized with a life-threatening complication from the infection. We checked with other states and found 2 other cases. By putting these 4 cases together, we found that all 4 patients had eaten the same meat product, steaks that were injected with a tenderizing material that had become contaminated. As a result of that information, About 740,000 pounds of steak were pulled from the market, preventing further exposure and further complications and illness. This is a picture from a couple of years ago of some of the more than 1,000 people who were offered immune globulin following a hepatitis A outbreak at a restaurant that sickened 39 people, three of whom were hospitalized. This highlights the close relationship with local public health that I mentioned earlier. The investigation and the clinic were a combination of efforts of both state and local health departments. Finding outbreaks early, preventing further cases, means fewer people get sick and subsequently need less expensive health care services. I would suggest that this year's flu vaccine shortage could easily have been considered a public health emergency. Minnesota did a much better job than most states in making sure its nursing home residents and other high-risk individuals received their shots first. And in fact, we were the first state to make sure that all of our residents in our nursing homes were vaccinated. We then gradually expanded eligibility for the shots to cover more and more Minnesotans. This provides an excellent example of how the public health can quickly respond to critical health issues. A major activity at the health department since 9/11 has been focused on bioterrorism and emergency preparedness. Federal funding supports state and local activities in improved communication, training of healthcare providers, planning, and tabletop exercises. This picture is from the anthrax scare shortly after 9/11, in which we tested dozens of materials that came from all over the state. Fortunately, we do not have any positive cases in Minnesota. We recently learned, proudly, that Minnesota had one of the top 10 scores for public health preparedness at this point in time. And I want to tell you, this was a result of a lot of hard work by a lot of people at a lot of levels. In emergency preparedness, we've also worked with the legislature to develop a legal framework for responding to terrorism and natural disasters. We have launched Minnesota Responds, which is a database of healthcare workers willing to respond in the event of an emergency. We have other states asking for how we did that and to use that as a model. We've worked with local communities on emergency response plans. In fact, Minnesota is one of only four states that has established relationships with tribal governments around emergency preparedness. Public health emergencies don't stop at borders or boundaries, and it's critical for all communities in Minnesota to participate. There are two newborn screening programs for the approximately 70,000 babies born in Minnesota each year. The first is a blood test for metabolism disorders, in which the baby is unable to digest fats or proteins or other nutrients. Through diet changes or medication, 75 to 80 babies a year in Minnesota are able to avoid retardation, disability, or even death through early detection. We are testing for a total of 39 disorders. This is one of the most comprehensive testing programs in the nation. We have a close working relationship with the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota to conduct the screening and coordinate the follow-up care. And the second program screens almost all newborns for hearing loss. About 200 babies a year are born with hearing loss. If the hearing loss is found before 6 months of age, the child can be helped to have normal speech, language, and social interactions. Without the screening, more often than not, the hearing loss is usually not picked up until the child is over 2 years of age, meaning much more expensive and extensive services are needed. Haemophilus influenza type B was a major cause of meningitis, with 200 sick children each year in Minnesota and an average of 4 deaths. Through education, coordination with healthcare providers, child care providers, parents, The number of cases of this disease is essentially zero, again resulting both in savings to the healthcare system, but I would suggest into a quality of life for families. MDH is also where you get information about trends in healthcare. This chart shows healthcare cost growth in Minnesota compared to some other measures. It's just one example of the kinds of information and statistics available from the Minnesota Department of Health. This kind of information is invaluable to policymakers and certainly to this committee as we look at ways to improve healthcare in our state. Over the past couple of years, the health department, either alone or now in concert with the governor's health cabinet, has begun addressing serious issues affecting our healthcare system. We created a consumer website, MinnesotaHealthInfo.org. We convened a group, as requested by the legislature, to make recommendations on evidence-based healthcare guidelines, and that report will be coming to you soon. We convened a group, also as requested by the legislature, to make recommendations on creation of an electronic health record and a statewide public health information network. And that report will be coming to you very soon. 650,000 Minnesotans receive care during the year from a nursing home or a hospital. We receive over 700 complaints about the care and investigate such concerns such as unexplained death, improperly functioning equipment, or medical errors. We investigate. We issue corrective orders and penalties if the problem is confirmed. This year, working closely with the Minnesota Hospital Association, we began compiling information under the new Adverse Health Events Reporting Law. Hospitals are now required to report to the Minnesota Department of Health whenever one of 27 never-to-occur events happens in a hospital. And what are these events? Things like wrong site surgery, items left in a body after surgery, serious medication error. This information is not to blame. This information is to focus on new ways to prevent such events from ever happening again, thus improving the quality of care in the state. We have also been working very diligently on improving how we monitor and assure quality care in our long-term care facilities. We're in the process of creating a new long-term care report card that will provide consumers with much better information to use in evaluating long-term care facilities. A key component of that is that we will be asking residents and are in the process of asking residents and family to rate their satisfaction with the care in the facilities that they are currently residing in. Our Office of Rural Health provides a forum for addressing rural health care issues across the state. The office distributes grants to maintain and improve the rural health infrastructure and workforce. It also helps coordinate discussions about and assists in developing policy direction for issues such as workforce, access to certain types of providers, availability of hospital beds, and those are just a few of the issues. We support a range of programs and resources for pre-pregnancy. We also coordinate programs to ensure a healthy start for children. For example, we administer the WIC, the Women, Infants, and Children program, which provides nutritious foods and nutrition education to eligible mothers and their children. This slide highlights one of the things that we're not so proud of. It's one of our growing problems with chronic disease. The maps show the increase in obesity in Minnesota in the last decade, actually in the nation, but you can pick out Minnesota. Frankly, we're not doing so well in Minnesota. We've not seen an increase in exercise or activity for adults, and you can see we're getting heavier. An MDH study from a couple of years ago estimated we spend $500 million a year on health care as a result of inactivity.
We monitor a variety of health problems, and we have a comprehensive statewide plan in place to address asthma, cancer, diabetes, and cardiovascular diseases. These plans include a wide range of strategies and recommendations. They were developed with a group of stakeholders. It was not just done at the department in isolation. And the recommendations include such things as what communities can do to promote better physical activity, how healthcare providers can offer the most effective treatments for their patients, how consumers can take steps to best manage their personal health. Because of the degree to which our own choices really determine our health status and the costs associated from those unhealthy choices, we strive to provide information and encouragement to help Minnesota make healthy choices. We are involved in the Governor's New Fitness Initiative, the Get Up, Get Out, Get Fit. We partner with Blue Cross Blue Shield on their Do campaign. And just as an aside, I hope you are looking down at the floor and seeing the indication of how far you're walking as you walk the tunnel. We are a key partner in Be Active Minnesota, a nonprofit coalition for organizations promoting physical activity. This slide shows a hand fan that we distributed to more than 30,000 people at the Minnesota State Fair 2 years ago. In the center of that fan is an actual packet of soap that was donated to us by a Minnesota company. The point of this fan was to promote better and more frequent hand washing, which is one of the most helpful things people can do to prevent the spread of contagious diseases. We have a very unique and innovative program in child care centers and schools in which we teach and promote proper hand washing. And I want to give you an example of how this has worked. We worked with teachers in several child care centers in central Minnesota. We had those teachers help the children wash their hands every morning when they came. And then the teachers disinfected anywhere where parents would have touched. And the result in those child care centers was a 50% reduction in illnesses at those child care centers. This campaign that we had, our hand washing campaign, won a state award. This slide shows a hand fan we did last year at the State Fair, again, to about 30,000 people. It encourages people to engage in physical activity. The flip side of this fan describes 10 easy ways people can get physical activity, such as park farther away and walk. Take the stairs instead of the escalator or the elevator. Walk the kids to school. And this slide shows a poster that you're likely to find in virtually every hospital and clinic in the state of Minnesota. In fact, if you have an opportunity to visit a hospital in another state, you will probably see it there also. It has even shown up in foreign countries, always with the MDH logo. We developed this poster last year just prior to the flu season as a way to help promote simple ways to control the spread of germs, especially in healthcare settings. When this year's flu vaccine shortage hit, we were very fortunate to have already had this type of a campaign in place, and we're very quickly able to say, cover your costs, and people understood what we were talking about. I'd like to highlight a few environmental health issues. Our drinking water program has received a national award for being most in compliance with Environmental Protection Agency standards for managing a drinking water program. Minnesota sealed more abandoned wells to prevent groundwater contamination than all other states combined. And this is an important point because of our dependency on groundwater for drinking water throughout the state. We're working with restaurant managers to develop food safety protocols and systems, not just inspections, to make sure that we protect our food safely. Floods and tornadoes are a fact of life in Minnesota. The health department quickly moves into action with services such as testing raw water for contamination, and this is a free service, and providing advice about mold, food safety, and immunization for such things as tetanus. You may recall the flooding that occurred in southern Minnesota in the Austin area. We worked with the local communities to assist them in safeguarding the public's health as they recovered from the floods. We've also been increasingly involved with the growing problem of methamphetamine in our state. This is a photo of a clandestine meth lab being cleaned up. In 2003, there were more than 500 clandestine drug labs where methamphetamine was made. Most of the meth labs, 75%, were located away from the largest Minnesota cities in rural or semi-rural areas. When meth ingredients are mixed and cooked, they produce harmful chemical residues that can remain on household surfaces for months or years after the cooking is over. Therefore, each meth lab or meth chemical dump is a potential hazardous waste site, which means then, more than likely, cleanup by a hazmat team. We're working with the Pollution Control Agency to develop guidelines for protecting human health from the effects of meth labs. We're also working together with public safety officials and local governments across the state to address this devastating problem. You need to know that Minnesota is a national leader in this particular area.
Commissioner, if I just ask a quick question about specifically the Department of Health role. The Department of Health itself is not putting personnel at each of these sites for the physical cleanup, are they, or is it more the local health and public safety people and that kind of thing?
Right, and we are working with Pollution Control to develop the standards as far as the requirements regarding the health component so that we make sure health is taken care of.
And Commissioner, in that one, who would declare a site now clean enough for being re-inhabited or used or whatever? Who actually would have that responsibility?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is the ultimate final control of that would be with the Pollution Control Agency.
Okay. Thank you.
Finally, we work with funeral establishments. This includes funeral homes, crematoriums, morticians, funeral directors, to assure the dead are disposed of safely according to health codes. There are an average of 106 deaths in Minnesota a day. We also monitor and respond to complaints about pre-need accounts. We've helped identify over $300 million in inappropriate handling of these pre-need accounts. So that's what we're about. Now, what are we looking forward to doing? We've identified several priority issues that we need to address in the coming months and years. And we've already talked a little about these issues because we're already working on them. We look forward to talking more about these with you and other issues during this legislative session. Our top priority, one of our top priorities, is preparing for health emergencies, public health emergencies. We need to continue to work with our local communities across the state to make sure that we are adequately prepared for emergencies. Our second area is to ensure quality care in nursing homes and other health care facilities. In the past 2 years, I would suggest we've made great progress in this area, but we need to keep the momentum going, particularly in light of the fact that the baby boomers are beginning to look at their golden years. Third is to improve the quality of health care and control rising costs. Fourth, eliminating health disparities. The work being done by our grantees and communities across the state is really starting to show results. We need to keep up the good work until all Minnesotans have an equal opportunity to share in the health of the state. Maintaining core functions of public health is not the last priority, but I would suggest it's a foundation to everything that we do. Our safe water, food, immunizations, newborn screenings. As we look and work on our special priorities, we must not lose sight of the fact that we cannot ensure a healthy population without maintaining the core responsibilities of public health. Now for our budget. We'll be back to talk to you about the specifics of our budget in greater detail once the governor unveils his budget proposal for the next biennium. But I thought it might be helpful to give an overview of our budget based on the current biennium. As you look at the pie chart, you'll notice the diversity of funding sources for public health. We have more than 7 separate funding sources for our programs and activities. The federal government represents our largest funding source, 44% of our budget. The state general fund provides only 16% of our funding. And where does our funding go? The majority of our funds, 61%, are given out in grants to local units of government, community-based organizations, tribal governments, and educational institutions. 39% of our funding supports MDH-based operations or activities. The MDH website offers a wealth of information on a wide range of health topics. We are always looking at that website, trying to make it as customer-friendly as possible. The information on the slide gives you an indication of how often and how much the website is used. I would encourage you or your staff to check it out and kind of see all the information that is there. But we do continue to monitor this because we do want to serve the citizens. Finally, I want to extend an early invitation for you to visit us in our new office building, the Orville L. Freeman office building, and the state-of-the-art lab, which we're going to be sharing with the Department of Agriculture. It opens hopefully next fall, and it's just about a block and a half from here, so a good walk. One of the things about the lab, this will be the first lab that will have been designed post 9/11. There is another, I would suggest, key component that is a wonderful addition to this, and that is to have the Health Department lab and the Department of Agriculture lab co-located so that we can actually share expertise. One final word about public health. It's been said that public health is an easy, easy field to fall in love with. And certainly that has happened to me. We've covered a lot of ground in this brief overview. There are additional materials in your packet, and I'd like to leave you with these closing points. Why do we say public health is one of the best investments government can make? Because the focus on preventing problems before they become human and economic losses cannot be overstated. We take pride in ranking high as a very healthy state. And much of that is due to you for your past support. We also know we face many challenges ahead to continue that trend and to reach out to those who simply do not enjoy the same level of health as other Minnesotans. So we look forward to working with you during this session to accomplish our mutual goals. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Sure, I couldn't help but when you quickly went past the website,
yes.
6 million hits per month. This website was established not very long ago, isn't it?
That's
remarkable.
Mr. Chairman, this is the website for the Health Department, the MinnesotaInfo.org.
I got you.
We can certainly get you the information on the consumer website that we set up. It is getting a significant number of hits. I wish it was 6 million, but I assure you it's not.
Well, thank you. But Commissioner, now I stand corrected, but I still think it's a compliment to the Department of Health. Those hits don't occur on websites that don't have much in them, and that's been around long enough that it's stood the test of time. Which, by the way, if I can sort of editorialize even a little bit further, for those who have been around for a while, I think one of the things that's always struck me about the Department of Health has been the competency and the nationwide recognition that the Department of Health has enjoyed. and again, that only becomes because of an outstanding record for all of your people. I think particularly in the epidemiology area, we've had recognition nationally over many, many years, really, for the outstanding work and kind of a leadership. So I compliment you and the entire Department of Health for that good work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will take that back to staff.
Well, they probably know already, but... you know what, in that light, you did have, I think, some assistant commissioners here. If you don't mind, maybe it would be good for the committee to get a chance to meet some of the other people if they want to kind of stand and introduce themselves.
Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah, but it would be better, I guess, to be in the microphone. Thank you.
Probably easier to hear me, although I think I have a voice that carries pretty well. My name is Carol Wolverton, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of the Community and Family Health Protection Bureau at the Department of Health. That covers the area of the local public health agencies, all the community issues that take place out in the local communities you all represent, also the family health issues, the WIC program, family planning issues, and also health protection, which is the asthma, cancer, surveillance area. I have the information and technology area as well, and adverse events within the Department of Health.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Aggie Lighthizer. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Health Protection Bureau, and that includes environmental health, the infectious disease, epidemiology, prevention and control, the public health laboratory, and the Office of Emergency Preparedness.
Thank you. Do we allow him an opportunity or not? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Stang, I have the Health Policy, Quality, and Compliance Division. We deal with nursing home, hospital regulation, the surveying process, the health economics program, e-health, which is something new and exciting that is continuing to get a lot of discussion and probably will get continued discussion. This session is in this area as well. So I look forward to working with this committee in the upcoming biennium.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Commissioner, I made mention of the health department move and sort of it's part of the deficiency bill. Is there anything more to add to that? Was I properly on track?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest you are on track.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, since the commissioner is here, could she just maybe break down some of what we're buying for that $4.7 million? I know it's some moving expense and it's some equipment and so on. All I just know is the total number, so is that something you have to share today?
Commissioner, maybe
I'm here to help.
Well, by surprise, the question, but if you have something on it, might be helpful to the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Abler, I have to use my cheat sheet. The cost includes physical move of the furniture and equipment, telecommunication costs, furniture and equipment that needs to be refurbished. Some of it we're going to use and reuse as much as possible. Some of it, in some cases, has to be refurbished. We do need some new. Part of the issue also is a recalibration of all of our lab equipment. When you move a lab and very sensitive equipment, the moving itself is costly, but then you also have to make sure your equipment is recalibrated once it is in its new location. And another component is transition rent, rent that's paid in the current space during the move and then for the final cleaning and getting that back to where it's supposed to be. So that's the nutshell, unless Commissioner Singh or Assistant Commissioner, I just elevated him, has anything to add.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I don't know if you want specifics on the breakdowns, but we're sharing this with the Department of Ag, and just to give you an idea of the total 4.7, well, 2.718 is recognized as the Department of Health's expense. As the Commissioner stated, a huge part of the expense is just the moving cost, but we would like to add that there was some concern last year raised with the total amount that we're using on furniture, and we went back this past session or this during the interim, and actually we reduced our amount by about 12% of what we're paying for furniture and equipment leasing, so that number is down. The overall number that we're requesting is increased over last session, but that is not actually new expenses. It's due to in the request, there's a second-year payment on the lease for last year. We only requested the one-year payment.
It helps. Thank you.
Thank you. Just another kind of side comment to kind of clean up some things. If there's no further questions for the Department of Health, I see none. Thank you so much for your testimony today and for your help.
Thank you, Mr.
And I'm sure we'll see each other a lot.
Yes, we will. Thank you.
We are at the 10:15 slot. I just want to acknowledge something, although we may not have as many today, but that over the years, I know I've heard from many people in the disability community that the 8:15 slot was really a hardship for them to get here. So I'm really pleased that my begging, pleading, and crying and everything that I did worked finally. The only thing was, I'm thinking this is going to be good for me personally, and then I forgot about Gunther's committee, and he meets at 8 o'clock, so I'm still here anyway. But I am pleased, so that particularly for that community for whom it was a hardship, that we're able to offer a 10:15 start time instead. Our meeting on Wednesday will be focusing on the Department of Human Services, Commissioner Goodnow with Assistant Commissioner Sue, something sort of like what we did with the Health Department. Of course, the difference there is that there's a lot more complexity and a lot more programs. I believe that's all that I have for today. I mentioned at the outset, and just a reminder, on the bonding bill, if you have any any new things that are around that you may be aware of, please let me know as soon as possible, because we're going to try to work to a timetable, and we'll try to get two members an inventory of what we did deal with a year ago, and then we can sort of decide how much of an orientation we need for all the members. And I apologize, because I know some members, there'll be some brand new things, and maybe you can turn to your senior colleagues and get some assistance so we can expedite it, but I don't want to just sort of railroad. If you think we need some more time on those things, we'll take the time to get acquainted. Yes. Oh, yeah. Members, the folder that you have, you can now keep, whether you need to bring it to the meetings here. Well, certainly, I would imagine, want to bring it on Wednesday and this week for the orientation. But the book. I'm sorry, the three-ring binder that you have. Yeah, the test will be probably Thursday right after we finish. And I'm going to have to skip out because I couldn't even pass it. Well, with that, thank you very much for today. We're adjourned.